I'll keep an eye on this. So you've been developing editors almost since you started at Coco, right? 3 years ago?
Yeah, at least 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5 years. So you're working together with Yannis, first of all, to build Editoria together. And then you became the editor specialist.
Yeah, like 1 year ago.
Yeah, right. So I think what we've all been surprised at is just how difficult building an editor is. Do you want to go into a little bit, you know, when you first started, what were the things that you were, that you found out about in terms of the difficulty of building an editor?
Well, for starters, I had no idea how a WYSIWYG editor is being built, as I thought it was actually editing HTML on the content editable. But soon after a couple of hours, realized that it doesn't actually edit HTML, neither understands HTML. It just parses HTML to just build a structure, a JavaScript structure, where it's easier to interact with as a developer. And this structure, then somehow it's translated into HTML. So a bold tag, it's not represented in this structure as a bold tag, but for simplicity, let's say that the editor knows that in paragraph 1, from position 5 to 10, there is a tag with a name, with an attribute bold or a name bold. Bold must could mean anything, it's just a name.
Yeah.
But this is translated back as a bold tag.
When you go out of the system?
No, when the editor reads the structure and presents to the user.
Right.
So the user might type and he might see nothing because you might have turned off the layer that takes this object and translates it into HTML. But still, everything that the user types or uses from the toolbar, it will be registered in that object, and suddenly he can see his work, even if in real time he doesn't see anything. The editor underneath, it keeps track of everything the user presses and then presents that in the content table in the form of HTML.
Right. So you're, if I could put this back to you, tell me if I'm explaining it right from what I understand from you, that you have content editable, which is a HTML attribute. It's a way of marking up a area of a web page so that you can actually sort of use it like an editor. It becomes an input surface.
Basically, you can type now.
Yeah, you can type in. And so the type of editor that you're building is taking this the input that the user is having into this content editable surface,
mm-hmm.
and then it's translating that into two things. One is the content, say plain text or whatever, and then an annotation layer that's saying at this place from point A to point B, that is what we call a bold.
Exactly.
Right. So it's actually like, it's not actually HTML you're dealing with, but it's more or less like an annotated data layer that conforms to HTML for display purposes and also for export to EPUB and stuff like this.
Yeah, the editor just exports HTML at the final step where he presents it in the content table.
Right. So does that mean then that when you're building this editor, not only do you have to sort of deal with this other type of data structure that's not HTML, but I mean, you must have to deal with the whole translation of the user's input into that data.
Exactly, but that makes it also feasible to have complex interactions, because you can register a lot of the user input, mix it together and do one step of something. Otherwise, that couldn't be possible in Contentable, because each key press is one action, but you might take three actions and do nothing, and on the fourth action you may produce something.
Right, like the ellipsis example you showed me is once.
Yeah, the user clicks two times the dot. On the third time, the editor will actually do something.
And so I can understand that you know, you're looking for this kind of behavior, and then you're translating it into something so that it's stored as an ellipsis, which is a special character, as what, you know, in both the display environment and in the data structure. But how do you actually manage that interaction? What tools are you using in order to, you know, listen to the user and then determine what the behavior is going to be?
So actually, this is done by each library we're using. So if it's Substance or ProsMirror or CodeMirror or React's or Facebook's editor, they have what they call a transaction layer between what the user does and where the data is stored. So you have access to this transaction layer, you can interact with it, you can add on it. So because it has some methods, you can add more methods to the transaction layer, and also you can interact with the actual store where the data is, and you might want to follow what the framework structure provides and is built on. That means that, for example, the ProsMirror has a tree structure. So you have a list, you have a list item, you have another list item that is nested, so that is represented in a specific structure in the document, but also because it's plain JavaScript, it gives you the flexibility to do anything you want. So if you don't like this structure, or if this structure it's not suitable for one use case, you have the flexibility to change it. It's
right.
Not that it is necessary to follow it, but it's good to follow the editor's, the actual framework's structure.
Right. So just there's two parts of that I find really interesting. One is that there are these large JavaScript libraries, which are more or less frameworks for building editors, right? And so the main ones that you have been in interacting with have been Substance and ProsMirror.
Yes.
Right. And then and they provide you all this functionality so that you can build editors. And the other one is that text itself is the interesting thing about it is editors are, it appears to me that editors are very complicated just because of the nature of text. I mean, we think of text as being one of the simplest things around, you know, it's on the internet and blah blah blah, but it's actually extremely complicated in that you can do anything. And so in the use cases that you've seen, have you seen it often necessary to override what the framework provides because the framework hasn't anticipated a certain way of doing things or a certain use case?
Yes, because it's not that actually hasn't anticipated that, but depending on the features you build and the features you build onto them. So for example, we have in our editor comments and notes and images that you can annotate the caption with HTML. So and we also have a previous and next for track changes. So this is a very specific structure for our editor, where you type your main content, where you type the HTML for the caption, and where you type the HTML for the notes. And this structure, of course, doesn't exist in the actual framework when you get it, when you start building the editor. So yeah, I created new methods to be easy to always get the next annotation in representative to what the user sees on his screen, but that's not what the actual how the data is stored, because he might see them as continuous. So he might see first in the main editor a bold, then he can see it another bold in the caption, and then the third bold is in the first note, but that's not necessarily how they are stored in the framework's structure.
Right.
So you must create new methods to be easy to always get the next annotation of something.
Right.
For example, lists work in a very specific way, but if you are asked to do them kind of different, again, you have to go and edit how the framework handles the lists.
Right. So the frameworks anticipate a certain way of doing it, and then you have to override it.
Yeah, and that's not exactly the problem, but where you have to find common ground with the user as you're working against the framework sometimes.
Right.
It will backfire for sure.
Right, so which I guess comes to the point about what a framework is trying to do, right? And Substance and ProsMirror, I think, take quite different approaches to how they solve this problem. One is potentially more opinionated than the other. Would that be accurate?
Well, on the document level and the transaction level, they are actually quite similar, but they are not similar in the way they are, the structure is stored. So ProseMirror takes a more common approach of how it should be stored. So it's nested, and in Substance it's not nested, which is a big difference. So in order to achieve nesting, it's not that easy on Substance, but there are workarounds, and there is where things become a little bit weird. And the Substance libraries, it's not just a small framework. It provides UI for everything. It provides toolbars. It provides menus when you right click, when you select something and you want it to appear on a pop-up. It provides modals. It's a complete framework. So in that case, it is opinionated because you can only create the menus in the way they tell you to, they give you the way to create them. Also in the data structure, they followed one pattern and they keep that. So you cannot escape the not nesting stuff. And on the other hand, ProseMirror takes an approach that the data should be nested, but also I'm just giving you the right tools to interact with the content editable and nothing more. So it's up to you what UI you will use and how you are going to mix all the certain stuff I'm giving you about the document to create the functionality you want. Also, a major difference is in the history they keep.
Mm-hmm.
So Substance just adds on an array of operations the next and the previous operation, and ProseMirror is way more advanced. That's why you can, when the user types a word fast, you can undo and undo the whole word instead of Substance letter by letter.
Interesting, and I guess that also helps you with the building of something like track changes.
Yeah, it's very important because it's basically, I'm just now finding stuff about that now, but from what I can see, it keeps a much better diffing between what happened and what is happening. So
right.
you have a way of diffing, and on Substance side you only have I pressed A and then I pressed B and then
right.
I pasted a word.
So I mean, the initial assumption would be that it's a framework that provides more, you might be less work to get somewhere, right? Whereas like with ProseMirror, you've had to build a lot of things, like how it manages the menus and things, right? There's a lot more to be built. Is that correct?
Yeah, because ProseMirror, I agree with the approach that it takes, that it's not up to the editor to have menus. The editor is just the interaction with the content editable, and that's what ProseMirror provides. So you can have an editor without menus. That's not, the menus are there for the user. So if, of course, it has commands and connectivity with commands. And when I say menus, I usually mean the UI blocks and making the menus configurable and things like that. These things exist in Substance because it has integrated a UI library of their own. In ProseMirror, you can write it in plain JavaScript or choose any JavaScript framework like Angular, or you can do it in React or Vue or
right.
Vue. It's up to you.
Right. So, but if you're going to do that, you're going to have to spend a lot more time building those components, that whereas Substance will provide some of this for free.
True, but there goes the thing that Substance is more opinionated,
mm-hmm.
because you can only use the menus in a specific way. You can only use the config from the menus in a very specific way. And ProseMirror gives you the flexibility to do it per use case. So the thing that I might come up with the menus might not be ideal for someone else, but for 10 use cases I'm building, it's the perfect match.
Right, right. And also, I guess, like, you know, the relative effort required is also linked to how it thinks about things, right? So it's not just that there are all these other a prescriptive framework that does a lot of things for free, also thinks a particular way about some things, and it's not just the fact that it's easier to develop with that or quicker, but in some cases it might even be more difficult or require more effort, like for example on the track changes. So can you give a relative effort sort of comparison of how much work it was to build track changes with Substance versus building track changes as you're doing now with Prosmira?
Well, Prosmira was way more advanced on that end. And basically when we say track changes, the first thing that comes in my mind is something that like Git has, which is basically very complicated diffing, but for the editors what we mainly mean is tracking every operation the user does, so basically it's typing and deleting and pasting and changing something to bold. And on that aspect, the Prosmira already in his document layer had anticipated that, so there is a structure there to make the diffing easier. And in Substance, there was nothing in the library. I'm sure at some point they will build something similar, but the real struggle there was because there was nothing in the library's core, you had to do every interaction by hand. So you had to write code for the enter, you had to write code for every when the user clicks a key press, when the user clicks the backspace or presses the delete. These are handled by Prosmira document layer and just returns you the end result. And instead of applying the result on the screen, you just mark it as blue text. That's all you have to do, basically.
Right.
Take the result and say, okay, don't put it as normal text, just make it blue.
Right, right.
Everything else is handled by Prosmira.
Right, and then you can identify when the cursor is in a blue area that certain contextual functionality is available.
Exactly. So Prosmira is very powerful on that from what I saw. It has plugins. So you can write a Prosmira plugin and say this is a highlight plugin. So when the cursor goes over, it doesn't have to be a track change. You can pass config into it and say look for track changes, comments and bolds. And when the cursor goes over this specific annotation, just highlight it.
Right.
Just make it blue, just make it
right,
anything. So the difference there with Substance is that you had to create all of this plugin system. Otherwise, you ended up writing the same highlight functionality for comments, for track changes, for bold.
Mm-hmm.
And in Prosmira, it's just a generic plugin that can do a highlighting functionality.
Right, so you can reuse that and sort of load it with other stuff.
Yeah, you can write basically as the more you put effort and think of abstractions, Prosmira gives you the ability to write plugins to abstract things so you don't write them again. So highlighting when the cursor goes over the text, it's a very good example of, because you might need it in many packages.
Right, right. So what was the relative effort? Like, how long did it take you to build track changes with Substance versus Prosmira?
So in Substance, to be fair, because it was one of the first big features we did with Yanis, so we didn't know the Substance library that well, what it could provide. I could say that it takes, if I knew Prosmira as I know Substance now, and the opposite, I could say it's 10 times faster to develop track changes in Prosmira. The only thing basically you have to do in Prosmira is to get the specifications of what will happen when different users edit the same annotation, because that's per case and Prosmira only stores the operation. So you have to take that operation and say it's a different user, do X or Y. That's basically the work you have to do. And any other specific that they are asked, like previous necks and things like that.
Right, right. So a lot of this building of the editor is like all these crazy micro transactions or behaviors. You know, a keystroke is the kind of atomic level that you're looking at, right? A user presses a key and you've got to be watching everything to see if something should happen, and then that also has to conform to a user's expectations. I mean, a lot of what I've seen, the work you've done, is just really trying to understand what people expect and then trying to remodel that. How have you found that whole process?
And that's the hardest one, as you might have a representation of the data of the HTML into some kind of data, but it's also what the user expects when he selects a block of text and with track changes he presses backspace. So in order for that to make sense for the user, if he has insertions of his own in there, it should be deleted. But that means that you have to go in a big chunk of text or multiple paragraphs and start removing small parts of a text, because for the editor, he doesn't understand what track changes are. It's part of the text and it's part of its data structure. So you have to go in and remove specific bits of text and bring the whole text again in alignment. That's not that hard, as the data structure of ProsMirror and Substance are good in handling these scenarios. But yeah, generally you have the feeling that you are chasing behind a cursor, because you try different things and different combinations with the keyboard, like shift and arrow, and you see suddenly a different behavior.
Right.
And you're trying to understand what happened and why the cursor jumped like two places instead
right.
of one.
Right. And also, I mean, part of that is, I mean, how much time have you spent? Because, you know, word processors are not, we're not born with a native understanding of what a word processor is. It's all learned from using them, you know, and there's huge legacies of word processors that have led up to our expectations of how they should behave. So how much time have you spent like clicking around Microsoft Word and LibreOffice and things looking for the behavior that is expected?
Basically a lot of time. And the thing is that, because some years ago I worked in Microsoft Word with building tests that the students can do in Word, and I saw how Word is made inside Windows with all its libraries and the DLLs that it's loading. And I basically, when we started with Substance, I thought that it would be impossible to get these kind of interactions in a browser because of the complexity of that, how the Word is and what they have done, which is amazing. But it turns out that although you don't have all of these libraries that support Word, by looking at it and studying it, also Google Docs, you can do all the interactions that happen in a sophisticated program that you can install in an operating system and has the support of the operating system. They can also happen in a browser, which is amazing.
That's interesting. So is it fair, sometimes I refer to them as not text editors or VisiVig editors, but web-based word processors, because that sort of points to a complexity that we can achieve now that were not necessarily available to us in previous eras of online editors, right? Like TinyMCE and all these things. Do you think that's a reasonable kind of way to describe it, that it's what we're building now is more web-based web processor, or do you think that sort of lineage is still very much within the VisiVig idea?
No, depends on if you put way too much effort and you have a good structure. Yeah, it's more like a word processor now instead of something that you can edit the basic chunks of HTML, because as JavaScript has advanced that much, you can do things that, yeah, some years ago sounded like that you will be in a lot of trouble if you go down this way.
Right. And so tell me a little bit about WAX 1 and 2. WAX 1 has been built, and its current editor being used in Editoria, for example. Word processor used in Editoria. It's got some very sophisticated functionality, track changes, very sophisticated notes management, a lot of other contextual menus. I mean, it's really a complicated application in itself, WAX. And then the second one that you're building now is WAX 2, which is built on Prosmer. So do you want to tell me a little bit about, you know, WAX 1 and the transition to WAX 2?
Yeah, so WAX 1, as you said, is based on Substance. And it's using everything that the framework provides. And it's, let's say, you just, when you install it, you just get one kind of an editor, which is the Editoria editor, as we call it, with all its features. The only things that you can intervene with the config, the editor config, is what menus you are going to load, and some things about track changes like colors, and if the editor will be in read-only mode or in typing mode. And basically that's it, and some things for the export that happens behind the scenes but are configurable. And WAX 2 is taking a totally different approach, as it's not quite an editor, but it's composed like ProsMirror from 6-7 different libraries that, when they are combined, they wrap ProsMirror in React, and they can build easily an editor. So when you get something, when you get WAX from ProsMirror core, you don't have to read ProsMirror's documentation. You immediately take a surface where you can start writing and adding your own schema. When you get a menu builder from components, immediately you have a menu with some specific tools that we have built, but you can add easily your own in the same way we added then. When you get some plugins we have, or some plugins that exist in the community that other people build, you can easily integrate them also in WAX 2 without going and editing any ProsMirror files. You just pass them as one word, basically. You just pass the plugin down the editor, and the editor will load the plugin for that specific instance. So in your use case, you might want someone build a very nice table package, and for one use case you might not want the table to resize. For another use case you need the table to resize. It's just you don't pass the option resize. You don't have to know anything about how ProsMirror works or how it is mounted. Although it would be good to have that knowledge, what WAX 2 does gives you a very simplistic API to build fast an editor from components that we already have, or components that you can find in other editors.
Right. So I guess part of that story is that the, I mean, ProsMirror has a sort of a growing community, and there's a number of plugins that are already out there in the wild. I mean, The Guardian's using it, New York Times is using it, Atlassian is using it. There's quite a few substantial organizations that are doing development against Substance, which is more and more looks like it's focused on texture development, and there's sort of less of a community around the actual core libraries and less extensions. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, basically for Substance, beside texture, I mean, and then when I say Substance, I mean on the latest versions up to 2 years old, I couldn't find another implementation besides texture. So basically we were on our own, and it's quite the opposite with ProsMirror, because I could find a lot of plugins and packages and things that people have built. And part of my testing with ProsMirror was to be able to add these people's plugins and packages easily to works too. So if someone comes along and builds a new version of tables, you can to be easily in 5 minutes to have it in your works too, which basically a wrapper of Prosmiro in React. So that's the end goal, because the packages are already up there, out there.
Right.
In Substance, it's basically text you and that's it.
Right. So and so going forward, I mean, that suggests that Wax 2 is becoming more of a kind of extensible word processor, web-based word processor. Would that be, is that an accurate summation?
Yeah, because what I, the, for the, I'm not working on Prosmiro that long, but from, by looking at different repos, what I understood is that everyone is taking the basic example of Prosmiro and starts doing something. So I thought instead of every time doing all of this work over and over again, or just taking Prosmiro basic example, what if you could have a faster way of integrating what is already out there into a Prosmiro editor? That's basically the idea.
Right. So say you provide a shortcut for people who don't, they don't want to, they might start with the smaller, less prescriptive core of Prosmiro rather than building everything around it to make a sophisticated editor. They could take the Wax 2 framework and throw away what they don't want and add what they do.
Exactly. And also, the Wax 2 doesn't come with any themes or layouts. Theme is for the content, and layout is how the editor will appear in, let's say, in mobile or desktop view. We will provide by default some themes, but also people can theme easily the editor. To you might take a package that you found, but it will be easy to change the colors and the appearance of the button in Wax 2 by theming it.
Right. So just lastly, like, I know it's a tremendous amount of work building something like this. I mean, it's kind of mammoth. And you know, I have two questions for you. Did you expect that going in? And are you still enjoying yourself?
I did expect it. Because I had the opportunity to work with Word, and I saw how complicated it was, and I thought that on web it's going to be more complicated than if I could use the word messy, but that's not the case. It's complicated but not messy, and yeah, I'm enjoying it because every time you have to find elegant solutions for solving a problem, because if I compare it to building just a webpack, a web app, there are so many things out there and so many powerful frameworks and libraries like React or Vue or anything, that especially in the front end, it's just mixing the right ingredients and now have a basic understanding of the framework to do the job. And in the editor, it takes way more than that, because even it has an API and it has some guidelines. When you build harder packages, you always have to think what will happen if the user interacts with it in this way or in that way. And yeah, that's the fun part.
For you, maybe. So just as a final word, I'd like to thank you for what you've done on it. You've done a tremendous job on Wax 1, and I can see you're now looking at your shoes. But I really appreciate the work you've done, and I also enjoy working with you very much. You're a great colleague.
Thank you. You do, of course.
Thanks, Christos.
Thanks.
So stay there. I'm going to take some photos.